Good afternoon, everyone. And we are going to talk about optimizing fleet performance. It involves several strategies and technologies aimed at improving efficiencies, reducing costs, and enhancing overall operations. Some of the aspects that shipping companies look at is route optimization, fuel efficiency, maintenance management, cargo handling optimization, performance monitoring, crew training, which we will talk about, and technology integration, compliance with regulations, data analytics, decision support systems, and most importantly, collaboration and partnerships. So today our panelists, and I'll introduce them to you, they come from very different and diverse organizations, and they will provide you perspectives based on their experience and what their organizations do. So to my left, that's Mark O'Neill. He's the president and CEO of Columbia Group, and he's also the president of Intermanager. Columbia Group has about 450 vessels, and Intermanager members manage close to 5,000 vessels. Next to him is Gabriel Dado. He's the director of revenue, Deep Sea Technologies. They provide AI for voyage optimization and vessel monitoring. Next to him is Damien Staples, Vice President, Indirect Sales, Inmarsat Maritime. They provide communication between the ship and shore, and I'm sure he will talk a little bit more about connectivity down the line. Frederick Prin, he is the Managing Director, Nord, Maersk Tankers. Nord is a subsidiary of Maersk Tankers, and they work with many owners and charters on their efficiency pathways. So I think Frederick will be able to provide us a broader perspective on them. And last but not the least is Jarden Gross, CEO and co-founder of Orca AI. And he's going to offer a new perspective that recognizes crew behavior as an essential element of optimization. So I would like to start with the ship managers first to see what they are doing right now, and then maybe we'll go down and see what solutions are being provided by the solution providers. So, Mark, the question to you is, what sort of performance optimization solutions does the Columbia Group use in terms of technology and software?
Thanks, thanks, Sanjeev, and thank you also to Capital Link for inviting us again to this splendid forum. Look, alongside some of the other larger ship managers, the Columbia Group likes to see itself really at the forefront of the technological and digital change. And we have a number of optimization platforms available to us and available to our clients. We see that is our role because we're able to make the investments that some of our smaller clients, Marco Fiori touched on it earlier on. It's all very well for the very big players to be able to do all these and invest in the new technologies and invest in the new fuels, but the smaller players can't. So that's where we come in, and that's what we've done with our performance optimization control room, with our partners OneLink, which offers a really uniform and holistic platform looking at lube oil optimization, fuel oil optimization, emissions registering and submission and trading. We also have a partner in Oceanly Performance, which looks again at the whole performance optimization of the vessels from routes to weather to fuel to actual engine performance. We have EngineLink, which is an amazing piece of software which looks at preventative maintenance, what you have to do, when you have to change your cylinder liners, how much life there's left, what parts of the engine are performing well, what parts of the engine are not. And then we have partners that are industry known, such as Kaiko, Cadmos, FrontM, all really good solutions that we're able to bring in, scale up, and reduce the cost of when we provide it to our clients. We have to optimize. I think as an industry, we're only really at the start of the optimization process. The optimization process is a ripple, and we need to make it into a tsunami. and we're not nearly there yet. There's a huge scope and opportunity to bring in much, much more optimization. When you look at the aircraft industry and the optimization that they're able to bring in across the board and in a uniform, collaborative manner, when you look at the car industry, the collaboration that takes place in the car industry on optimization, we're hopelessly behind the curve. And I disagree wholeheartedly with whoever it was on the last panel that said, you know, we're right at the forefront of change, and we always have been. We're not. We're walking blindfolded through all of these changes and thinking that our voice actually matters and counts and will be heard when it doesn't. We have to collaborate more with other sectors and harness the huge optimization potential that other sectors are seeing that we're not. We're playing at it at the moment.
Thank you for that, Mark. Just as a follow-up question, as president of Intermanager, what trends do you observe with the way your members are managing it? Is there collaboration there? Are they working together?
Well, I mean, I think, as I said, all of the major ship managers have optimization platforms. But we are all putting our baubles on the Christmas tree. And the Christmas tree is starting to look like one of those horrible over-decorated Christmas trees that you see in supermarkets and malls just before Christmas. Everybody's got a shiny bauble to add onto the Christmas tree. What we are failing to realize is that the tree itself needs to be replaced. And when you look at the aircraft industry has an organization called CETA. And CETA is owned by all of the major aircraft operators, and CETA has a uniform IT backbone for the entire aircraft industry. You go into an airport, from the moment you check in to the moment you collect your luggage at the other end, all of the facial recognition, all of the IT on board the vessel, all of the comms, etc., is all handled by a single IT backbone on which you can add your various baubles and apps, etc., and do whatever you like. That's what we need, so that vessels can talk to ports, and the ports can talk to the haulage companies can talk to the airlines, the entire logistics network can talk to one another. At the moment, we're just focusing on the baubles. As an organization, Columbia is talking to CETA to provide that backbone for the industry, and it will not just be evolutionary, it will be revolutionary. When an IT backbone comes into this industry, we will be able to drive through the optimization and the efficiencies that at the moment we're just playing with. We'll be able to collaborate with the other sectors in the logistics setup and worldwide setup that we just can't do at the moment. So whoever is thinking about bringing in new management systems or new operating systems or complex IT, wait, because CETA is coming. And when it comes, just as it's done in the airline industry, it will steamroller through a really efficient, collaborative IT backbone, which this industry so desperately needs.
Thank you, Mark. I think we look forward to CETA coming in. That leads me to a question to Frederick. Frederick, where do you see the blockages and barriers in the decarb in shipping? And what sections of the value chain do you see are not doing enough?
Yeah, so thanks, Mark. Some interesting prospects. And also, again, thanks for having me here at Capital Link. It's great to be back. I think in terms of barriers out there at the moment is probably the complexity of the many different solutions available and choosing the right solution that's fit for purpose for your fleet and also for your vessels. In Yacht, we represent mostly on the hardware front the different options that are out there, but also there's something on the vessel performance and the software front. But helping owners navigate the different options and tailor-making what's the right fit, what's the right suit for their vessels is one of the barriers that we try to tackle. And I think that's key number one. And I think it's super encouraging to hear from Mark the number of initiatives from your side in terms of supporting the owners, and that is really what is required. Someone who steps in with an expertise within the area, who has worked within that area for a long period of time, and brings those learnings to the table. And that's at least what we have attempting to do with Maersk Tankers through Njord, to bring those learnings in. But the complexity, there are more than 40 different hardware solutions out there today. One of the things that are discussed widely in the industry is window system propulsion. There is now more than 15 different system providers, although it has only been applied on around 50 vessels in the industry. So it's actually quite a broad market of selections with very few installations. So what's the right thing to bet on can be quite difficult to assess. The next thing is trust in numbers. This is where digitization really comes in and having this vessel performance platform. But you need to trust in the business case of saying, if I do this, this, and that, will I then actually see the investment return to me accordingly? And that can be super tricky, especially if you have not done any pilots yourself before. Then some owners will be hesitant to implement technologies at scale. They prefer to implement one vessel, one technology, test it, trial measure for a year or two, and then potentially scale. And that's again also where I think the industry could benefit from knowledge sharing to ensure that the ones who have tested and trialed it actually shares the proper data one way or another, so owners, they are allowed to scale it. And then the last barrier that we see is around who pays. We talked about it, and it's a widely discussed topic. Split incentives, if you TC out your vessel, then investing in the vessel versus who actually benefits from the fuel savings can be a bit of a complex matter. Again, we see that there are positive trends in terms of the discussions going on between owners and charters, willingness to co-invest in certain technologies, even for vessels that are on shorter periods, even where it's a bit more complex in terms of what happens when that period ends and the vessel goes on to a new charter. So I would say those are the challenges, the complexity of the landscape, choosing the right thing, trusting in numbers, also up front before you've actually trialed things, and then figuring out who pays and having a proper business case split between the ones who are incentivized of investing. Yeah.
Thanks for that, Frederick. I think after the discussion of obstacles that we face in the industry, let's move to Gabriel. Since you are on this solution side, can you share with us the insights into how you use predictive analytics and AI-driven solutions to forecast, you know, say, for instance, market demand, cargo capacity, and improve fleet efficiency?
Yeah, look, Sanjeev, I think we are at a very exciting point in history where we can leverage computing power and artificial intelligence to really tap into, uncovered parts of it, least resistance when it comes to operating vessels, sailing from point A to point B, monitoring vessels. And I agree there's a lot of fragmentation out there in terms of people that do things in-house, various bits of different softwares. I think what's important is to realize that the data that we take out of it, the final result is really as good as the data that you feed in. So having the aspiration to continue working with vessels with new reports only, echoing what Mark was saying earlier on, we are far behind what other industries, where other industries are in terms of what we can do with the data and how we can leverage this data to go towards, to take the next step. With AI, what you can do very simply now, which human mind cannot do, is solve problems made up of 19-dimensional problems of differential equations that help us basically discover what's the best and most the safest as well as the most profitable way to run a vessel and monitor the equipment while we do so. And so leveraging this, I think we're at a turning point now in history in what we can do with our vessels, which no longer relies on the expertise, on the vertical expertise of the operator or the master or the chief engineer on board, but really leverages a computer power to be able to go the extra mile. And linking back to what comments that were made before, in terms of ROI and quantify those things, we're now in a position to be able to do so through artificial intelligence.
Thanks, Gabriel. I think that puts me to the next one, to Jarden. There was a talk about not having to use the master and chief engineer on board to do too much, but I think your solution looks at crew behavior and helping you move on the sort of performance optimization business. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, of course. So what we're doing with Oak eventually is creating a platform. Now you can hear me? Yeah, now it's better. So what we do with Orca is providing a platform for the crew and also for the fleet managers And basically, they're engaging with a platform. And they're getting insights based on AI. And the power of AI is to be able to take a lot of data points together in real time and accumulate them, crunching the numbers, and then providing the relevant insights to improve either the performance of the crew or to reduce their workload. And what we see is that there is a major ROI on that, right? So we see that the crew behavior is actually changing once they understand that there is a gap in certain performance. So it's starting from safety, for example, how you take a maneuver. If you take unnecessary maneuver, extreme maneuvers that can actually risk the vessel, that are violating SMS. Once they are aware, this is the first step. Second step is to provide recommendations on how to close the gap. So you can do it on the safety side, but then also you see impact on fuel efficiency. So once you're actually reducing the close encounters, once you're reducing unnecessary maneuvers, extreme maneuvers, similar to how you're driving your car, you can drive your car very aggressively and then spend more fuel. So it actually, with chips, it's even more extreme. And we saw pretty big transformation in that once you're providing the crew the right insights on how they can actually improve their performance. So I like what Fredrik actually said. You know, eventually it all comes to numbers, so you need to be able to measure that over time, and you need to be able to measure the impact on the operation over time. And if you combine that with crew behavior, it can become actually a very powerful tool.
Well, thank you for that, Jordan. All of these solutions will eventually require good communication.
Eventually.
Well, it does. So, Damien, question to you. What trends do you see in the industry and in terms of growth in this sector? Because we've got Starlink in. So I'll leave it to you.
Yeah, well, Sanjeev, thanks for having me here, and thanks to Capital Link as well. It's good to be back in Singapore, the recently re-crowned global shipping hub of the world, I think, as yesterday regained the crown for another year. So well done, Singapore. I always enjoy flying in for us. We sort of look at ourselves as being the grease or the oil that enables the digitization of the maritime industry that my fellow panelists have just been alluding to this morning. And, you know, when you fly in here, of all places, you get a real sense of the scale of this industry coming in towards Changi Airport and looking out at the vessels in the sea of this particular port. We are crucially working harder and harder to try and facilitate the technology and the applications that my fellow panelists have referenced here this morning. It's a difficult conundrum when the industry probably wants to move faster. You know, Mark suggested that the industry hasn't moved fast enough in the context of digitization and technology evolution, and that's probably true. But that's hard to do without the connectivity that it makes that possible, and the speed and the capacity are particularly important, and we're seeing this rapid evolution in demand for connectivity in the maritime industry that is hard to keep up with. From an operator perspective, if we see maritime sector or vessel growth slowing, as we heard on the previous panel, to around 1% or 2% in terms of vessel numbers, on the data side, we're seeing data utilization on existing vessels increasing by 20 or 30% per annum. This is a conundrum because, to the point that was made to my left a few minutes ago, investing to enable and provide that capacity costs real money. And it's no longer about having a single network or a single solution or a single technology. And equally, it's about making sure that different technologies can connect with each other. This idea of having some sort of unilateral industry standard for how we evolve the technology on board vessels and enable digitization both on board but also into the cloud, which better connectivity enables. And we've seen that the business case and the use case for that in the terrestrial context over the last decade. You know, inevitably, the demand will continue to increase, and that requires further investment, and that, in the context of understanding the business case, requires us to really think hard about how we make that happen and how we pay for it. So I think this is a collective conundrum that the whole sector faces. Obviously, the operators, the SATCOM operators, play a crucial role, and I think we're getting a sense of how important the connectivity is as an enabler
as the maritime industry digitization starts to really pick up.
Thanks for that, Damien. A follow-up question on that.
Yeah.
So what do you think are the challenges in providing better connectivity to the ships?
Well, as I say, I think it's... there's a single operator response to that, which is, you know, from a SATCOM perspective, launching more satellites. But at the same time, it's about considering how best we can collaborate and integrate different technologies to provide a connected solution that delivers the best possible connectivity at all times. And I think, you know, one of the challenges that the industry is facing from a SATCOM perspective is how to ensure that connectivity is always there. You know, Mark alluded to the aviation sector, where reliability and service guarantees in relation to connectivity are crucial. No one would be keen to get on a flight out of this airport, out of Singapore, if you were worried about the connectivity being continuous on board that vessel. And I'm not talking about the Wi-Fi for the passenger. I'm talking about connectivity to the cockpit. You know, in a world where shipping becomes more autonomous, in a world where we have the maritime sector and the applications on board vessels are becoming more crucial in relation to how ships are insured, or how ships are financed, or how routing is coordinated, how maintenance is scheduled, how audits are conducted. You know, the reliability and service availability of the comms becomes absolutely paramount. And so that, I think, for us is the key challenge, but it's also an opportunity, because that can be monetized, right? And as maritime digitization does ramp up and does pick up pace, you know, we need to be there right alongside to ensure that we can support it and enable it. But that will require us to think a bit differently in the context of our own business model as well.
Okay, Damien, thanks for that. I think we should then speak to an end user, and I'll come back to you, Mark. How do you ensure effective communication and collaboration between your shore-based teams as well as with the onboard personnel? One is, of course, for the fleet performance and optimization initiatives and operational challenges in real time.
Well, I mean, we use our digital platforms and the various services that we have available to us, the POCR. It's not left to the master anymore to make these important decisions. He or she, and I stress she, to have all of the backup of the office and the digital solutions that we have, which continually monitor that. We also have various systems in place so that we can really have a virtual walk around the vessel and check that the crew on board are doing what they're doing. The crew can be familiarized with the vessel before they even get on board the vessel through the various virtual reality training that we have through our partners OneLearn. So communication, not just oral communication, but teaching, training, visual, is incredibly important, and is part of the offering that we, of course, have to provide to our clients. But just coming back to my airline analogy again, and the fact that I think we're slow and behind the curve. There's an old adage: how does one eat an elephant? And you eat it in bite-sized chunks, otherwise you don't manage. We haven't got time to eat the elephant in bite-sized chunks anymore. We have to eat this elephant in one gulp, otherwise we're going to be marginalized and left behind as an industry. Can you imagine the airline industry having a panel like we had in the last three panels, discussing all of these issues on alternative fuels, decarbonization, technology, the various IT solutions? No, they had these discussions years ago, and they all came together, and they decided on the way forward. The problem with our industry is that we're so hopelessly fragmented. And, you know, I've called for one voice in the past. Actually, I was completely wrong. We can't have one voice when we've got thousands of different languages. You know, we really need to get our IT language, our backbone, sorted before we can take decisions on alternative fuels, before we can take decisions on decarbonization, on training, on vessel types. The car industry has decided that the combustion engine is with us. And we're still, and they've decided on the fuels and the carbon stripping technology and the carbon capture technology. Electric vehicles will be part of that mix, but those decisions have already been taken. We're investing hundreds of millions in vessels for ammonia and methanol and potentially hydrogen and other fuel sources where we haven't even come together and made a decision on what's most appropriate for us. And that's because we don't have this IT backbone to enable us to gather all of the data and have a mature conversation, a mature debate, and then convey a mature message to the rest of the industry sectors. We have to harvest and analyze the data that we're producing to enable us to do that.
Thanks, Mark. Frederick, would you have some comments on that?
Yeah, I actually like the different references that the Marks uses. Now you've both been eating an elephant and also decorating a Christmas tree, but I think it puts a good reference to the challenges that we're facing. It's just to put a reference on what we need, what are we facing at the moment, and the fact that maybe it's not as difficult a pathway as we assess. I mean, what we have seen so far in terms of getting on the decarbonization path is that if you combine your way out of it with different technologies, there are some very good business cases to actually be made. We talk savings of plus 10% and return on investments on less than 2 years, especially with the new regulations kicking in. If you trade Europe, then you can shave off several months of that return on investment as well. So I think we are actually the industry has an opportunity here, and that elephant might be more delicious to eat than just a hard work that you're facing, back to your reference on that. And then that's not even accounting for if you really embrace the digitalization and look at the data and use that data to optimize your performance, then I think those plus 10% can go way beyond that. And that's then back to your Christmas tree reference, which I think was also very good. For me, it comes down to the data point being clean and being right from the get-go, so you don't make assumptions based on wrong data or not clean data. But the second thing to be very much aware of is you also need to be ready to take this step. I think we've worked with owners who have set up some kind of data structure, who have put on auto-logging high-frequency data transmitters, set up the right connectivity. But organizational-wise, mindset-wise, they have not embraced the fact that they will now have a lot of data coming in, and they need to act on that accordingly. So I think those are two key priorities to make when you set up a system like this: data cleanliness, and then also that the organization has the right mindset to start working on this data. But then, if that's the case, I think eating the elephant can be potentially delicious, and that Christmas tree will look very nice.
Well, luckily we're very close to lunch.
Can I just add a comment? Yes. I think maybe from our perspective, the challenge is to how do we make a pipe big enough to enable you to eat the elephant, you know? and I think the point that Frederick made is very good, which is to say, if we could do that, and if we can enable that always-on guaranteed ubiquitous connectivity, what use cases does that enable that save ship managers and ship owners money? Because that's what I was referring to in relation to reinventing our own business model. And I think this is a very interesting area for us to be exploring together.
That's great. I would like to come back to focus on the crew's role on board the vessel. Coming back to you, Jarden, what do you think is the crew's role and how are they impacting performance?
Sorry, I couldn't hear. So what?
What is the ship's crew? What's their role and how are they impacting the vessel's performance?
So I think it's not just about the crew role, it's about the company role eventually, it's about the company culture as well. Eventually, when you implement a certain technology, and going back to what Frederick mentioned here, eventually it's about the business case. No one is implementing or adopting technology or AI or for technology or for AI, or is not going through digitalization for digitalization. They're doing that for creating a better business case. And this is also about the crew, and it's also about the operation of the entire company and the culture of the company. And this is very important. And I think in order to do that, and this is also coming as a responsibility of the technology vendor, not every company, every owner knows how to adopt the technology in the right way. So it's also the responsibility of the technology vendor to walk through with the company, with the crew, on how to adopt the technology in order to create the best outcome in terms of the business case. And this is very crucial. And it comes to how do you train the crew on the technology,
how you create visibility between the crew and the shore, how you create visibility to the measurable KPIs that impact in the business case. If it's certain KPIs that are relevant for safety, if it's certain KPIs that are relevant to fuel efficiency and performance, eventually it needs to be translated to how the operation is happening on board the vessel, how the operation is happening in the office. For us, as we do it, we have a very defined process on how we're working with customers. Today we have about 1,000 ships deployed with Orca, over 35 customers, ship owners, shipping companies. They wouldn't use us just to deploy technology. They're using us because they see impact in their business, in their day-to-day operation, and they see that because we're working very closely with them. And we are translating the crew behavior, the performance of the technology, to how it's actually impacting on what it matters for them the most, which is eventually performance, fuel efficiency, and safety.
Thank you for that. I think this leads me to the next question to Gabriel. Yarden, yourself, your companies are looking at emerging technologies using AI. And eventually, this is something that is going to lead towards autonomous vessels somewhere down the line. How do you think these solutions will impact the future landscape of fleet performance?
Well, I think through AI, you can start harvesting that potential, which is hidden at the moment, which us as humans cannot fully realize. So through that, we then need to bolt it onto the vessel, control systems. And again, we have sort of the human barrier there because, let's not forget, the software has to work for the people, for the users, and not the other way around. And in terms of what we have seen as a service provider, that sometimes there is sort of friction between the actual user on board and the ideal, world that the software would advise. So, for instance, we have a software that advises through the best way to go from port A to port B, but we only see that best case scenario we have about 75% compliance from the vessel side. And 75% compliance is in fact very good. The missing percentage might be due to operational considerations, health and safety considerations, but in the end of the day there's always the human component there that does not allow us to fully realize the potential of autonomy or the full potential of artificial intelligence. So what we can see today through use cases in the car carrier sectors, in the container, in the bulk segments, both wet and dry, we've seen between 6 to 11% savings due to AI for voyage and therefore for fuel reduction as well as greenhouse gas emission reduction. Now that can be improved even further through making things a bit more autonomous. And that means feeding the AI, the indications to the vessel in terms of speed and route are recalculated on a 4-hourly basis, subject to the dynamic meteorological conditions, present and future, in which the vessel is going to navigate. And that can be fed directly into the engine control system. And so this is now something that we are doing through our parent company, Aptesco, which makes up a significant share of the market in engine control systems, and therefore we can directly link into the vessel control systems to make these a lot more autonomous than it is today, which requires to go through the master and manual input on board. And so doing that is a further step towards autonomy and integration between, machine and machine, so both software and AI and vessel translating speed commands into what makes the vessel sail through the path of least resistance.
Thank you, Gabriel. You mentioned crew acceptance is about 75%. So my next question is to Yarden. With your solutions, what do you measure crew acceptance on guidance that is provided through your solutions? And the second one to that is, how do you measure the ROI when you are implementing these tools?
Yeah, so it's a good question. Eventually, if there's not going to be a crew acceptance, if they're not going to adopt a certain tool, platform, technology, you're not going to see impact on the business case, on the operations. For us, it's very important. And we are doing that by providing trainings, gathering feedbacks, doing monthly meetings with our customers, and providing insights. Also sharing which vessels didn't accept or didn't adopt it as we wanted. And eventually we're asking a very specific question every ship or every crew that we're talking with. And we call it NPS, Net Promoting Score. And they need to rate it between 1 to 10. How much do you recommend Orca to use on other ships? How much do you recommend to your colleagues to use Orca? And this really gives you visibility to not just how much value they're getting, but you know, if they're actually recommending it to others, then they want to use it and they want to see it implemented with other ships, meaning they see the value, they believe in that, and they're getting and they see the impact. So that's very important. Related to the ROI, so what we do, we are setting, and this is also part of the process working with our customers, we need to remember, eventually it's not just about building technology. Building technology and great product, this is the key. This is very important. But when you come into a traditional industry and you're trying to implement it, you need to be able to create certain processes as a technology vendor that will enable you to do that. The customer needs to believe in the product, and he believes in the product based on the ROI, based on the numbers. So it needs to be quantifiable, it needs to be measurable, and he needs to not just to see the numbers, he needs to believe that your platform was creating the impact on the numbers. How we do that? We're creating reports on a monthly basis, we're doing QBRs, and we're showing the improvement on certain KPIs to our customers. And we are showing also what was the impact. If it was the crew behavior, how they operated the vessel after using Orca, if it was based on creating visibility to the office, if it was providing recommendations and how the recommendations mitigated certain effects in the operation that improved performance, improved safety. And eventually, it's also coming down to create visibility in the organization. And this is something that is very important, something that is happening because of connectivity. There is visibility to how the ships are being operated, not in a way that you want to say, okay, this is a bad captain, or creating a big, broader effect, but to actually improve and create a situation where everyone wants to be better. Everyone wants to have better performance because everything is much more visible, and they're visible to other ships, it's visible to the office, and I think that's a very strong step forward, and we see the impact. We see the impact happening.
Thank you, Jan. We are about 2 minutes away, so I have one question which I would address to Frederick and then perhaps Mark as well. We do discuss a lot about new construction, but how are you enhancing the efficiency of your existing tonnage, and what do you think about upgrading and retrofitting on the existing tonnage, and how will it impact the performance of your vessels?
So I can start. I mean, there's a huge potential in upgrading existing tonnage. There's no doubt. And again, back on some reference points to make it as concrete as possible, out of the now more than 200 vessels that we've looked at outside of the Maersk Tankers fleet, in average, around 9 technologies are relevant to apply. And back to the figure from before, it's plus 10% savings, around 12. It goes across all kinds of technologies, anything from enhancing the performance of the auxiliary to the main engine to hull performance to propeller performance, and then to looking into some of the more novel stuff as well, air lubrication, wind assist propulsion, and then obviously what else you can put in terms of digital solutions to enhance the performance through the crew or the operator. So the potential is significant, and I think we have, this is also, if we are to meet the new target set for all of us in terms of decarb, this is also what we have to do. Existing tonnage, yes, huge potential. New buildings as well. It's not all new buildings as well that are actually optimized from the get-go. So there's also more to do there. But to answer your question, yes, on existing tonnage, there is a lot to do. Yeah.
And very quickly, reiterate and support all of that. Clearly, optimization we're only at the start. It's still the ripple, not the tsunami. We have a huge amount of work to do on that and to drive real optimization through this industry. Part of that is data and how we're collecting a lot of data, but most of us are not knowing how to harvest that or analyze that data because we don't have this IT backbone that links all the dots between our industry and all of the other sectors. And, of course, all of the discussion at the moment is on alternative fuels and alternative combustion and decarbonization. We're a firm believer in the fact that fossil fuels, although decarbonized fossil fuels, will be with us for all of our lifetimes here. And therefore, there may not actually be that much updating or retrofitting that is required, except for the means to carbon strip, carbon capture, or have the engines able to operate, the existing engines able to operate on biofuels with all the optimization techniques that are available. That's what we're seeing in other industries. That's what we're seeing in the motor car industry. That's what we're seeing in the aviation industry. And the likelihood is that's what we'll see in this industry. Why should we be different? So there's your answer.
Well, thank you, Mark. That was going to be my closing statement. But it was an interesting discussion. I think we're looking at emerging technologies and looking at AI as well. So that was a very nice discussion. Thank you very much to the panelists.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.